Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. David Nassar was approached to write a biography about Joseph Kennedy by Kennedy's children, Gene Kennedy Smith and the late Senator Edward Kennedy. They offered unfettered access to previously unseen papers. Having written biographies of Andrew Carnegie and William Randolph Hearst, Nassar does a good job of showing how those titans of business operate. His new book is The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy. Nassar details how Kennedy was a brilliant businessman and an outstanding chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission who failed as a diplomat when FDR named him as the ambassador to Great Britain. He was a spectacular father who adored his nine children, four of whom predeceased him, and he was one of America's most complicated and controversial figures. David Nassar is the author of Andrew Carnegie and the Chief, The Life of William Randolph Hearst. He is the Arthur M. Schlesinger Jr. Professor of History at the Graduate Center of the City University of New York. David Nassar, welcome to the Roundtable. Nice to have you here.
Delighted to be with you.
Okay, so there has been so much written, so much discussion, so much analysis on the life of Joe Kennedy. What drew you to dig even deeper into this subject?
Well, I read the material that was out there, and there was a pretty good biography that was done in 1960, and Doris Kearns Goodwin had written about the Kennedy and the Fitzgerald families, and that was pretty good. Mm-hmm. But no one had access to the material that I was given access to, and I had the feeling that there was going to be something there that other people hadn't found. That's number one. Number two, I'm a historian. And I'm a historian who writes biographies. And in the life of Joseph P. Kennedy was so much that I could tell an alternate history of the 20th century from World War I to Hollywood in the transition from silent to moving pictures to Wall Street, the FDR campaign for the presidency, the New Deal, the run-up to World War II when Kennedy was the ambassador to Great Britain, the Cold War, the New Frontier. It was Joseph Kennedy was like this Zelig-type character who was part of the history of our country.
The the children, Senator Edward Kennedy and Gene Kennedy Smith, did you say to them, hey, you know, you may not like what I find here?
I told him that exactly. I tried to talk in my first conversation with Senator Kennedy. I really tried to talk him out of this book. I said to him over and over again that I'm a crazy, obsessive researcher, and I'm going to find stuff that's not going to make the family happy. And I said, as an afterthought, you know, who knows, when this book comes out, some Kennedy might be running for office again.
Yeah.
Little did I know that a man named Joseph Kennedy III was going to run for office a week after week before my book came out. And he said, we understand that, but we want to go forward anyway. And the reason I think was that during his life, the Kennedys, all of them, including Joe Kennedy, came to the decision that they were not going to defend accusations against the patriarch because they wanted the focus to be on the children, on Jack and Bobby and Ted and Eunice and Gene. They didn't want the conversation about the Kennedys to be focused on the father. And as a result, whenever anybody had some accusation or charge to make about the father, everybody let it go. It was not defended. The result was rumor after rumor was thrown onto the public agenda with no answers. And by the year, 2007, 2008, the Kennedy family wanted the record cleared. And they asked me to do that.
Well, I mean, there were so many things out there, so many accusations, if you will. He was a bootlegger, he was an anti-Semite, he was a Nazi sympathizer. What did you find that changes our picture of that?
Well, I found a lot, I think. I found, first of all, that in addition to everything we thought we knew about him, he was a force in Hollywood.
Really?
He was a force in Washington. He was a force he was an active voice opposing the Cold War. I never knew these things, and I don't know if anybody else did. He was not a bootlegger.
He was not a bootlegger?
No, if you ask 100 people to describe Joe Kennedy, 99 of them are going to begin with bootlegger.
Yeah.
One of the things I found that was totally, you know, that just rocked me was that there was no talk whatsoever of his being a bootlegger until the middle 60s, and even more so in the early 70s. Richard Nixon, when Richard Nixon ran against JFK in 1960, mm-hmm. Richard Nixon had his researchers pour through every document, everything they could find, to dig up dirt about Joe Kennedy. There was no mention of his being a bootlegger. When Kennedy was appointed to the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Maritime Commission, and in the 1950s to a number of high-level government agencies, there were five separate investigations of this man, and not one of them, and I had access to all the FBI records, mentioned Kennedy as a bootlegger. Hmm. It's only after Jack is assassinated that researchers and journalists trying to link Oswald to the mob begin, or whoever was the assassin to the mob, begin to turn up all these stories. Suddenly, Meyer Lansky and Frank Costello and Joe Bonanno come out of the woodwork, and they say, oh yeah, I worked with Joe Kennedy. Al Capone's Al Capone's piano tuner grants interviews and says, oh yeah, I was there tuning the piano when Joe Kennedy and Al Capone arranged a bootlegging deal.
Yeah.
I mean, when you track down these stories, none of them pans out.
Well, I mean, if you're going through his personal papers, just to play devil's advocate, if he was a bootlegger, he's not going to write about it in his personal papers, is he?
No, absolutely not. You're absolutely right. But there would have been some mention during the campaign of 1960. There would have been some mention in the FBI records. There would have been some mention in government reports. The IRS would have found this. The only hard paper evidence that anybody ever came up with was the record of a Joseph Kennedy Limited in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
And the Canadians didn't care about bootleg liquor crossing the border as long as the Canadian distillers who sent it across the border paid their excise tax. And apparently this Joseph Kennedy didn't pay it, and in 1931 was accused of illegal liquor trafficking. Well, I checked out that Joseph Kennedy. I had researchers look into it. I looked into it. I looked at business records and tax records, and I discovered that the Joseph Kennedy of Joseph Kennedy Limited was Daniel Joseph Kennedy of 1119 Nelson Street in Vancouver, not Joseph P. Kennedy of Brookline.
We're talking to David Nassau, whose new book is The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy. Was Joe Kennedy an anti-Semite?
He was not an anti-Semite as, you know, if one describes an anti-Semite as someone who believes there's something in the Jewish genetic makeup or the blood that makes Jews sinister, untrustworthy, and, you know, out to destroy Christian morals. Henry Ford was an anti-Semite. Charles Lindbergh, Lady Astor. Kennedy was not. But what happens is during his time in London and afterwards, Kennedy is so convinced that America should not go into the war or aid Britain in a war against Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. He can't believe that the rest of the world doesn't agree with him. And in order to understand why he's in the minority, why he can't convince anybody that we shouldn't enter into war against the Nazis, he resorts to the oldest scapegoat in the land, in Western civilization, the Jews. And he begins to argue publicly and privately that there is a Jewish conspiracy to get Americans into the war, that Roosevelt is being led by the nose by his Jewish counselors, that the Jews are not to be trusted, that they want revenge against Hitler, and in order to do that are going to drag the entire nation into a war. And his rhetoric becomes increasingly anti-Semitic, and he begins to accept every myth about Jewish conspiracies, Jewish control of the media. He should have known better, but he was swept away in this miasma of anti-Semitic myth. He was not the only one, and I think that's important. In the 1940s in Washington, the question isn't who was an anti-Semite, but what kind of anti-Semites were there. The State Department was filled with them. Hmm. It was a different time, and Kennedy was part of that time.
So, you know, I've seen written references that FDR, to some extent, sent Kennedy to be the ambassador to Great Britain in a way just to get rid of him on this side of the pond. What do you think about that?
I don't think he sent him there for that reason. I think he kept him there for that reason. He believed, you know, when he first heard that Kennedy wanted to be the ambassador to Great Britain, his son said he laughed so hard he almost fell out of his wheelchair. Joe Kennedy was the least diplomatic man in Washington. He had a foul temper. He had a vicious tongue. His language was, you know, salty as a sailor. He knew nothing about history or diplomacy or international politics. But he was shrewd, he was smart, he was observant. And Roosevelt believed that he would provide Roosevelt with a better sense of what was going on in Europe than anybody else could. Mm. He also owed Kennedy, because Kennedy had been good to him all through his administration, and he needed Kennedy to support him in 1940 if Roosevelt ran for a third term. So he wanted to repay him, and this was how Kennedy wanted to be repaid. Once Kennedy got to London, it was clear almost from the very beginning that he was going to be a disaster as an ambassador, because he wasn't going to follow orders. He wasn't a team player. Mm. And at that point, Roosevelt should have withdrawn him, but was afraid to have him come home and campaign against Roosevelt when Roosevelt decided to run for re-election in 1940.
One of the things you get from reading your new book, The Patriarch, is how conflicted and complex the guy was. Joseph Kennedy, devout Catholic, I think everyone would describe him as such, yet he had affairs with Gloria Swanson and others. How on earth did he rectify that in his head?
He was a master at what we would today call compartmentalization, I think. His deal, and it was unspoken, unarticulated, you know, never written down. His deal with Rose was that he would live his own life, but he would not embarrass her. And he had affairs almost from the moment they were married, but he didn't embarrass her. And they lived separate most of their lives. He would be in Hyannisport when she was in Palm Beach, or vice versa. He believed that what a good husband and good father did was provide for his children and not embarrass his wife.
Yeah.
And he did that. The rest was his business. And again, this was not as out of the ordinary. I don't want to excuse his philandering. I certainly don't want to do that. Mm. But I want to point out that, you know, Rose's father had lived the same kind of relationship with Rose's mother. This was not unheard of in their social circles.
Well, you know, the new book is so rich with so much great information. I wish I could talk to you for another half an hour, but David, we're out of time here. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure.
David Nassau's new book is The Patriarch, The Remarkable Life and Turbulent Times of Joseph P. Kennedy. It's published by the Penguin Press, and a good read it is. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.